From the heart of rural France, this is the Keto Woman podcast, brought to you by me. Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. I've been keto now for over 2 years and it has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs under 20 grams a day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds and the incidental carbs you find in things like full fat dairy. Choose delicious fatty proteins and be free and easy with oily dressings on salad and butter on your veggies. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. You'll hear all sorts of ways to keto from my guests. There is no one way to do keto, no one size fits all. I hope to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we really can't give you medical advice. It's always best to consult your own doctor when making big changes to your diet and lifestyle, because they know you and your medical history, and so have access to the bigger picture. Wouldn't it be helpful to have one place where you could find all the links? Want to sign up to my new Patreon-exclusive Facebook group, Daisy's Lovelies? No problem. How about subscribing to my YouTube channel? Please help me notch up my first 1,000 subscribers by going to links.ketowomanpodcast.com and following the YouTube link. Not following me on Instagram yet? Hit the Instagram button. You get the idea. All the buttons, all the links you need are at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. Thank you, Elena Bjornsdottir, for supporting me and this podcast by making a pledge at my Patreon page. Do you want to hear your name here at the top of the show? Are you enjoying this podcast and would like to help me make more episodes? Then head over to my Patreon page at patreon.com/ketowoman or hit the support button on the Keto Woman podcast website. It means a great deal to me and you will get to headline the show just like Elena did today. Thank you for joining me for episode number 146, where I am joined by extraordinary woman Sarah Hung. Sarah has been on a low-carb and ketogenic diet for nearly 4 years and has never been happier with her diet and health. She was first accredited as an international board-certified lactation consultant in 2001. She ran a private practice called Lotus Lactation in Hong Kong for several years and previously worked on the maternity ward of the Matilda International Hospital in Hong Kong. Once upon a time, she was a mathematician and a transport planner. Sarah trained in the community with La Leche League and was accredited as a leader in July 1995. She has been helping mothers with breastfeeding problems and leading LLL meetings in Hong Kong ever since. Sarah has 4 children, all of whom were breastfed. Poor old Sarah ended up recording over 2 hours, and I've split it into 3 parts. The first part, which we will get to in a minute, focuses on Sarah's keto story, and then the following 2 parts dive into lots of fascinating information about breastfeeding. So make sure to tune back in over the next couple of weeks to listen to the rest. Sarah shares a lot of advice and wisdom that I think will be really helpful to new and repeat mums alike. So let's dive into that first part now. Welcome, Sarah, to the Keto Woman podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
I say today, it's very late in the day for you, isn't it?
Yeah, there's still a few minutes left.
Thank you for doing that. You're a bit of a night owl though, aren't you, really? We've had this conversation before. You like the sort of quiet space you get. You're alone time to work late in the evening.
Yeah, I like not being disturbed. And then I sleep in till about 10, 11 in the morning. I'm sure it's not good for my circadian rhythms.
Oh, I don't know. I think your body gets used to things. I know that is a part of it, but there's also the part of it of what fits in best with your lifestyle and, you know, makes you happy, I guess. So it's a balance.
My husband's a early bird. So he gets up, he goes jogging. And then when he comes back, I get up and we interact. And then in the evening, he goes to bed and I do what I want.
See, that sounds like a good balance to me. You've got to work around these things in life and find out what works best. I don't have to navigate having to deal with anybody else, you see. So I just get to do what I want, full stop. Yeah. Apart from the dogs, of course. They're not too demanding when it comes to things like that. We're here to talk about you. We're also going to be talking about breastfeeding and tapping your knowledge on that area. But first of all, I thought it'd be nice to find out about you and your story. So take it away wherever you want to start and we'll just go from there.
Well, as far as my weight's concerned, I can't really remember what it was like growing up. I don't think I was particularly overweight. Obviously, when I got to about 16, 17, I thought I weighed more than I should, but in hindsight, I think I was probably fine. I remember losing weight to get married, and I sort of knew how much I could eat and stay the same weight. So I was quite happy. I got married, and then I moved to Hong Kong. And the style of eating, when you're eating in a Chinese style, is all the food is on the table and you just pick what you want and put it in your bowl. Mm. And because it's not on a plate with, like, you know, meat, veg and potatoes, you don't know how much you're eating. And so I tended to overeat, and I am a bit of a picker. I like a bit of this and a bit of that and a bit of this and a bit of that. And I also like to do that all day long. So over the next 18 months, I put weight on, and I also got pregnant. And so I put weight on through the pregnancy as well. And that carried on. I had a second baby and I put weight on, and a third baby and I put weight on. And so by the time my third child was about 2-3 years old, I weighed at least 50 pounds more than I should have done. And I joined Weight Watchers. I actually have a success story with Weight Watchers, in that I lost 54 pounds and I managed to maintain it for a number of years afterwards. But looking back, the Weight Watchers I joined was not a points or a calorie counting style. It was portions, and you had so many portions of, like, carbs, you had so many portions of milk, so many portions of protein, and so many portions of vegetables. And I found that when I analyzed it afterwards, knowing what I do now about keto and low carb, it was actually a low carb diet I was on.
Oh, how interesting.
And during my maintenance period, I also stayed fairly low carbish. The woman who was the Weight Watchers teacher, I think she deviated from what Weight Watchers would be telling us. And she went into all sorts of things. And I remember she recommended one book called Thin Taste Better. And he has, at the beginning of his book, lots of, like, quizzes that you can do to find out what sort of eater you are. Because me and my friend, we did them and we discovered that we just like eating all the time, basically. But I asked my husband to do it, and my husband never changes weight, no matter whether he eats or whether he fasts or anything. He just never changes weight. He just stays the same. And he did these quizzes and he came out sort of like normal. He wasn't a picker. He wasn't a grazer. And he wasn't a hoarder and all these things he wasn't. And he told me that I'm the abnormal one, whereas I was telling him he was the abnormal one. But there were a lot of tips in that book, and there were a lot of tips from the Weight Watchers teacher, which helped me maintain my weight.
How fascinating that there was that focus on behavior, not just the food. And I think also the thing that most people are probably in agreement, although again, it does kind of depend on the group itself as to the benefits you get from this, but the whole, the group support element. Now that, because like probably most of us have joined Weight Watchers at any given time in our lives, and I didn't get on with it. I didn't get on with the general mentality of the group. It was very sort of guilt and shame based. You know, there was the whole queuing up to get weighed at the front, and you were either, it was either a thumbs up, well done, or it was, oh, you've stayed the same, or you've put a bit on. And I always remember walking away from it feeling guilty, and usually going to the chippy on the way home and buying way more than I would have done normally going to a fish and chip shop. So it had a very negative impact on me. But I know a lot of people get a lot from the group support element of Weight Watchers, regardless of what kind of diet they're peddling.
I think I did benefit from the group support. And also, I don't think our Weight Watchers teacher was particularly judgmental about whether, obviously, if people had succeeded, they were, you know, everybody was happy. But if they hadn't succeeded, she didn't sort of broadcast it to the rest of the group. It was just between her and the participant. And so I think she understood where we were coming from. Mm. And I just feel that she did a very good job. It helped it.
Well, it sounds like it, because to be honest, most people who go down the Weight Watchers path, well, I don't know about most. I suppose I would have to actually look at the accurate statistics rather than making sweeping generalizations. Certainly from my own experience and a lot of people I've spoken to, is that you might lose weight while you're there, but then you're likely to regain it afterwards.
Well, if we move down a few years, I started putting weight on. And I also felt really quite ill. And I remember going to see the doctor and saying, she asked me how I was, and I explained that I felt ill and I didn't feel good. I said, I have just had flu, but that's not why I'm coming. I'm coming because generally I just don't feel good. I feel tired. I feel cold. And she said, oh, I think we better do some blood tests. And she did the blood tests, and I got diagnosed with hypothyroidism.
I was going to say, that's what was flashing in my mind when you said that.
And so she told me to take these tablets for 3 months and come back after 3 months. So I took them and I came back after 3 months. And she said, so how are you feeling now? And I'm saying, well, I've never felt so well, despite the fact I have morning sickness.
Uh-oh.
And unfortunately, I lost that baby.
Oh, dear.
But I got pregnant again within a year. So I started that pregnancy not that heavy. But during the breastfeeding, I just seemed to go wild and put it on and on and on and on. A number of times after that, I tried to lose weight and it didn't seem to work. What I'd done before wasn't working. The points on Weight Watchers didn't work. The portions on Weight Watchers didn't work. Like, nothing worked. And I remember being really motivated at one point, and I decided, I can't make the scales go down, so I'm not going to count my success of whether or not I lose weight. What I'm going to count my success is whether or not I track, because that's up to me. If I track every day and I've tracked for 7 days, then it doesn't matter what the scale says, because I've been good and I've succeeded. So that's what I did. And for the first 3 months, I lost weight. And then for the next year, I tracked every day and I never lost any more weight. Which, now I know about keto and insulin resistance and all that, it all makes sense. But at the time, it didn't. Then my friend came to visit for Christmas and I made chocolate fudge and all that hard work went out the window. And I tried occasionally and I might lose maybe 10 pounds and then I would stay the same and then I would give up. And I think it's a very common scenario for people.
Very.
And then I went to visit my sister 4 years ago and she told me about low carb and not eating carbs. I left her and I went to one or two other places in my holiday and I ended up with my two daughters going to Italy for a week. I found Italian food actually quite easy because you have the like pasta course, which is carbs, and then you have a main course, which is just protein and vegetables, and it's not carbs.
Yeah.
So on that holiday, I started eating a main meal, which was protein and vegetables and ice cream.
Well, it's very difficult, isn't it, to be in Italy and not eat gelato. I'm with you on that one.
Yes. So, but when I left Italy, I went back to London for one night and then I flew back to Hong Kong. And on the plane, I decided two things. One, I decided I'm never going to eat on a plane again because the food is disgusting. And number two, as soon as I land in Hong Kong, I'm going to try this low carb diet that my sister told me about. And so I did. And I didn't really know anything about it other than the fact you're not meant to eat carbs. So I made lots of mistakes at the beginning, like milk has got so many carbs. And I would say for every cup of tea I had, I was probably having 3 or 4 carbs per cup. And I used to have like 5 or 6 cups of tea a day. So that was all my carbs gone with the milk. And when I discovered how many carbs were in the milk, I decided, right, I'm not going to have tea with milk anymore. But I didn't like it. So then I decided to start drinking herbal teas and fruit teas. And to be honest, I didn't like them either. But I persevered to the point where I won't say they're the most lovely thing ever, but I can definitely drink them now. So I just made myself drink it until I didn't dislike it.
Or it's finding ones that you like, because to be honest, most herbal teas I don't really like, but there are a few that I like. And there's, you know, my green and mint tea that I drink, I really like. So it is usually a case of perseverance and trying all sorts of different ones. And there are usually some that hit the spot.
Well, I buy a packet of different ones, like 5 different fruit teas. And I think you get like 4 tea bags of each one. And so I can mix it about. But to be honest, I don't think I've had any for about a year now, but it definitely helped at the time. Then I decided I wanted to find out about low carb, and I tracked everything I ate in my FitnessPal app, and they have forums. So I went on their forums and I discovered that low carb was very controversial. But they had a particular forum for low carb, so I joined that. And after that, somebody recommended the 2 Keto Dudes. So I started listening to the 2 Keto Dudes maybe 2 or 3 months after they'd started.
Right, oh, quite near the start.
And then I listened to them until you started. And then I started listening to you as well. And they seem to have stopped now. So
yes, that's right. Had a bit of a change and then stopped.
So I just listened to you and your mindset one as well.
Yes, the new one. How are you liking it?
I tell you what I like about it. I like the fact it's short.
Yes, that was definitely a consideration, because I listen to all sorts of podcasts and, you know, I do like the short ones. I think certain formats work well with short podcasts. And I think it's nice to have that sort of that round about 20 minutes, because it's quite often you have 20-minute slots, don't you, for, you know, the journey to the shops or whatever it is. It's a handy sort of size slot, I think.
Yeah, well, I go and pick my husband up from the MTR station or I take him and then come home, and it's 15 minutes. I either then have to stop if it's a longer one, or listen to it and not do any work for an hour, which is obviously a problem. So I do like it, the fact it's short. So I'm up to date with that one. And then somebody, I think it must have been the two keto dudes, were talking about Dr. Jason Fung. So I watched, I believe it's 6 or 7 hours of him on YouTube.
I've watched that too.
And I learned an awful lot about it. And it all seems to make sense to me.
Yeah.
And it seems to cover all the problems with dieting that calories in, calories out don't cover at all.
All starts to fall into place, doesn't it?
And at some stage, I decided to go keto and just reduce my carbs right down to less than 20. So I would say for the first 3 or 4 months, I was only low carb, and then I was very low carb, and then I went to keto. I don't know, I just enjoy it. I like it. I like what I eat, and I don't miss the carbs. And I'm probably a very annoying person because I don't really miss the carbs. And I can honestly say that in almost 4 years, I have never knowingly eaten sugar.
Good for you.
I have eaten sugar occasionally because it makes me feel ill now. Like at dinner on Sunday, something must have had sugar in it, because after dinner I felt really quite ill. Not for very long, fortunately, but I just didn't feel like socializing or anything. The only time I remember actually choosing to eat something with sugar in is they were having lychees, and I used to love lychees, and I thought, I'll just have one. I ate it, and almost immediately, within 10 minutes or so, I had these terrible, terrible cramps. So bad that I couldn't drive home.
Wow.
My husband doesn't like driving, so I tend to do all the driving, and he had to drive home. Unfortunately, by the time we got home, I was okay again, but it's really put me off knowingly eating fruit. And then I also listen when I'm in the car to audiobooks. So I've been listening to Gary Taubes, and one of his books, he says that it takes 18 months to get over your cravings for carbs. And when I listened to this, I'd been keto for 2 years, and I thought, I'm there. I don't have cravings for carbs, and it's obviously I've done it in the last 2 years. So yes, I'm a very annoying person. My other friends who are on keto with me don't understand that.
I wonder, yes, how much that does actually make a difference. If there is, I'm sure there isn't as specific necessarily a tipping point date like that. But I've definitely wondered how much it impacts you having even just one meal that's not keto, how much it sort of sets you back in that perspective. You know, I'm not saying it has to be a massive setback overall, but I'm wondering, yeah, if there is some magic in completely abstaining for a large block of time, and you know how much you sort of backtrack in that time frame by having an occasional meal or a week's holiday off keto or something like that. I don't know. It's all sort of kind of theory, isn't it? But maybe there is actually something solid in that.
Well, I think it's a bit like addiction full stop, isn't it? Like, you know, if you're an alcoholic and you give up alcohol, you can feel really good about yourself, and you can feel really good that I haven't had a drink for 10 years. And if you then have one, you lose that good feeling, irrespective of what it does to you physically. And I think maybe some of it for me is that, that I'm not going to knowingly have sugar, because then I give up the fact that I've not had it for 4 years. And that makes me feel good. I just love the keto lifestyle. I love the food that we're allowed to eat. And I love I just love the food.
And how it makes you feel. And so I guess because you started talking from the weight perspective, that's something that you've lost that excess weight now and are maintaining that. How has it worked from that point of view?
Well, I'm, what do they call it? Still a work in progress.
Aren't we all?
I have a big, big goal. And my first big, big goal is to weigh less than my husband. And I am only 1.5 kilos off this goal.
Wow, close.
So I've lost 31 kilos, I think, so far. I still feel that there are bits of me that I would like to get rid of. Mm-hmm. And so I am just keeping going, doing what I'm doing. But it's very slow. Like in the last year, I have only lost 5 kilos. But I haven't put any on.
No, exactly. That's, you know, that's something that people often fail to celebrate, even if all you've done is maintain all you've done, quote unquote. That's actually a big achievement, especially if you spent your life with your weight fluctuating up and down, up and down, up and down. Actually, to hold your weight loss is really something to be celebrated.
So I'm expecting maybe another year before I hit maintenance. Maybe another 2 years. I don't really mind how long it takes because I have a belief that eventually I'm going to get there. And so if it takes a long time, it does.
And also that it's not a temporary diet change, is it? When you speak about it, you love keto, you love the food. So it's not really a case of, well, I'm going to eat this way until I hit the goal that I've decided and then I'm going to change that. Nothing's really going to change, is it, as far as your diet goes? So
I think I will not fast as much
right
in the future. But you know, like, I'm not 100% clean keto. You know, I make staples that we have. Like, I would say once every 3 weeks I make bread rolls, and then I'll eat one and I'll put the others in the freezer. And so if we go out for a meal, I will take a bread roll with me to the restaurant, and then I can have a hamburger with a bread roll, like a proper hamburger. And I make seed crackers that I have with my husband. Loves to have crackers and cheese after his meals. So I now have crackers and cheese after my meals too. And yogurt. We make yogurt every week. I make him yogurt because he really likes it. I don't have it very often because I'm not that fond of yogurt. I'd rather just eat cream, but every now and then it's quite nice.
That's all very clean keto from a ingredients point of view though, isn't it? There's nothing not clean about those ingredients. I guess what you is not quite as strict.
And then the other thing is that if it's somebody's birthday or I'm having a party, I will make desserts. So I can't remember whose birthday it was, but it was somebody's birthday and I made a chocolate cake, a death by chocolate cheesecake.
Nice.
Because my son asked me to make that. When everybody's eaten their fill of it, there's always at least half of it left over. So I just chop it up and put it in the freezer. And then I had a party a couple of weekends ago and I made chocolate brownies. So I have a lot of chocolate brownies in the freezer too. Now, once upon a time, I would not have been able to leave them in the freezer. I would have just, oh, I must have that and get one. And then, oh, I must have another and I must have another. But I can just leave them in the freezer and forget they're there. I only know that they're there because I went to get something out of the freezer and there they were, blocking the way. I had to take them all out, get what I wanted out and put them all back in. So I know that they're in the freezer now, but I don't have any desire to eat them at the moment. There will be a time when I have a desire to have a chocolate brownie and I know I can go and get one, but it's just amazing to me. They don't trigger me in the way that they used to trigger me. And my husband likes ice cream too. So I make homemade ice cream with no sugar. And so we often have ice cream as well, which is quite nice.
Very nice. Yeah, I have to admit, I'm not really one of these people who could forget that there were brownies in the freezer. I've got better with the fasting I've been doing the last few weeks of not eating those things, obviously, on fasting days, but they're very much in my brain that they're there and I'm waiting to, like, ice cream is the thing that I have in my freezer. And I won't eat any today because I'm fasting. But tomorrow, when it's eating day, I know I will be having some of that ice cream. I wouldn't be able to leave it just for the weekends or something. What I'm going to start doing is just actually is making a smaller amount so they only last for the weekends. And then with that extra barrier of having to make it, it can be enough to stop me. But once it's sitting there, ready and waiting in the freezer, I don't have quite the same level of control that you've reached. Sadly, maybe one day.
Problem I have is not once they're ready, it's making them.
Right.
Like, I was brought up being allowed to to wipe out the bowl when we made cakes and things at home.
Yeah, me too.
And it seems like it's still impossible for me not to do that. So I find that, like, particularly if I'm making that chocolate cake, that chocolate cheesecake, by the time I finish making it, I'm full because I've eaten too much of the mixture. I remember, I think it was Carl saying, oh, I love to cook fasted. I hate it. I hate to be fasting and to not eat the mixture.
Definitely.
And I did it. I've done it twice last week, and the whole time I'm saying to myself, do not take any of the mixture. Do not take any of the mixture. And I managed it, but it's willpower. Whereas the thing I like about the ketogenic diet is that it's not willpower. It's just easy. And so, yeah, that's what I like about it. It's the way it makes me feel and the way it stops me from bad habits that I used to have.
And what happened with the thyroid issue? Did that turn out not to be a thyroid issue and it was just things fluctuating with the pregnancy, or was that still an issue?
It's still an issue. I have to take a tablet every day and it keeps it in check.
Right, yeah, same here.
And basically, I haven't changed the dosage, but maybe 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, I went to see the doctor. And she told me of the latest research that she'd been reading, saying that it's better to be lower than higher. And so she reduced my dosage from 100, whatever they are, to 75, which would not be a problem, but you cannot buy the tablets in 75. So one day I take 100 and the next day I take 50. And I have a evolved system of how to make certain it's correct.
Yes, it's a pain. I had similar problems once changing. I actually changed the medications around a bit, I think, to get over that. But it is a problem when the tablets don't come in the right size. It's not so easy to split a tablet into three quarters, is it? So I think I came to the same conclusion and went sort of over one day, under the next day, which probably isn't optimal, but what else can you do?
I think it's okay. Anyway, that's what I do. When I was diagnosed and I told my mother that I'd been diagnosed, she told me that I had found a good doctor, because often doctors are unwilling to do these blood tests for thyroidism. So she's been my doctor ever since.
Yes, it's definitely an underdiagnosed and often not necessarily mistreated, but not adequately treated, should we say, condition, it seems anyway. And so where does the breastfeeding come in? This is what you do. Perhaps you could tell us a bit more about that and when that came into your life as a career.
Well, after I'd had my first daughter, in Hong Kong, you go to the maternal and child health clinic for checkups. And I went and she needed feeding. And I sat down and fed her and they were horrified. And they took me into another room and they put a screen round me. And I was angry, I think might be the right term, for what they'd done to me. And so At the time, we had a phone-in program every morning where you could phone in on any subject. It's still there, but now you've got to phone in on their subject rather than on any subject. And so I phoned in and complained that this had happened to me in the government clinic. And did they not appreciate how good breastfeeding was for both me and my baby? And somebody told me about La Leche League. There was a meeting the next week and I went to the meeting. After the meeting, I called my brother who was staying with me and I said, what are you doing for lunch? And he was going to meet his girlfriend. And I said, I want to come with you. And he said, what are you going to do if Emily needs feeding? Then I shall feed her. And so we trundled off to this huge, huge dim sum restaurant. I don't think I've ever been in a bigger dim sum restaurant. And when she needed feeding, I fed her. And I don't think I was very discreet because, like, people were standing up at other tables to look at me. One of the, the trolley ladies who bring the dim sum round looked at me and apparently said, I didn't know anybody did that anymore. And when I went to the restroom, the ladies looking after the restroom, they were so excited to see me. I've never, ever had better treatment in a restroom. They wanted to hold the baby. They gave me towels. I was treated so well, and all because I was breastfeeding my baby. But in those days in Hong Kong, only about 5% of women did breastfeed.
Wow, that's low.
So anyway, I joined the La Leche League and I went to meetings. So I went to the meetings through having her and having my second child. And then when I was feeding my third child, a friend of mine and I, who were going to the meetings together, we decided together that we would try and become La Leche League leaders. So we did all the paperwork and we answered all the questions and we corresponded with people. I was given something called the preview. And in those days, that was the last thing you did before you got accredited as a leader. But you needed to have, a leader there. And at that time in Hong Kong, all the leaders had left. So I didn't have, but we decided in La Leche League Hong Kong that we should send somebody to the international conference. And the reason I got to go rather than my friend was because my son was 3 months younger than hers. So my son went for 10% of the price instead of 75% of the price. And when I got to the conference, I shared a room with some people from South Africa. And when they heard all I had to do was the preview, they were determined I was going to leave the conference a La Leche League leader, which I did.
Yeah, fantastic.
So that was 25 years ago this month.
Wow.
I've been running meetings in Hong Kong for quite a long time since that time.
So you were the only leader then in Hong Kong at that time?
I was the only leader for a while, and then we accredited more leaders. Because Hong Kong's population is very dynamic. People come, people go. This is in the expatriate community, yeah? Mm. Leaders moved in and then leaders would move out.
Right.
So my friend, who we started together, when she got accredited, 1 month later, she left Hong Kong. So I never actually got to work with her as leaders together. So people came and people went. And I think I must have helped accredit round about 10 leaders altogether in those 25 years.
Great.
And then they go on and accredit more leaders. So I just take it that if somebody I helped accredit accredits another leader, that's my leader too.
Definitely.
So, little dynasty I'm building in Hong Kong. Then I was talking to somebody from Japan and she needed a letter saying that she had been a leader for a certain number of years. And I said, why? And it was to qualify to take the IBCLC, International Board Certified Lactation Consultants exam. I didn't know anything about being a lactation consultant, but my view was if she can do it, I can do it. And I spoke to my mum about whether I should do it this year or next year, because I only had like 3 months left to revise if I did it this year. And she asked me a very pertinent question. She said, if you leave it till next year, when will you start revising?
Good point.
So I decided to do it that year, and I put off the revision, and we went on holiday. And the last night of the holiday, I thought, I haven't done any revision whatsoever, but I brought all these books with me. So I started on the last night. And then 3 weeks later, I took the exam. But if you're a lactation consultant, you have to recertify every 5 years. And every 10 years minimum, you have to retake the exam. So next year, I have to retake the exam in order to stay certified.
Mm-hmm.
And then after next year, the following year, they're going to change the regulations so that you don't need to take the exam every 5 years, but you do need to have 75 hours of education every 5 years.
Right. I see. So you have to, there's ongoing education that you have to do all the time, really.
Mm. And that is what my business is. I provide ongoing education in the form of conferences to lactation consultants and any other medical professionals if they want, but mainly towards lactation consultants.
Mm. Interesting. So, yeah, you teach the teachers.
It's quite a specialised field, but again, it's one that I enjoy. And I find quite a lot of similarities about being keto and being a breastfeeding mum, in that, like in Hong Kong, if you tell somebody that you're breastfeeding, they say, oh, you must be so good. And if you tell somebody, I don't eat sugar, oh, you must be so good. And there's also, with both of them, the medical establishment seems to want to undermine your efforts, in that if you have any problem with breastfeeding, often the first suggestion is, oh, you need to supplement, rather than you need to get help to find out what the problem is. And if you talk to people about keto, oh, you need more carbs. Well, do you? Or do you need to have help to find out what the problem is?
Yeah. To get the resources and links from this show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com/episodes. Please share this podcast with as many people as possible by sharing one of my links or just taking a screenshot of an episode that you enjoyed. Reviews really help raise the profile of the podcast, which gets it in front of more people, but also helps me attract a wide variety of guests. So please take a minute to leave a review on whichever podcast app or platform you like to listen on. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share and comment on my posts. Your support really does mean the world to me. Thank you. Are you enjoying this podcast? Help me make more episodes and videos by making a pledge at my Patreon page, patreon.com/ketowoman. Or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman Podcast website. Don't forget to join in the fun on the Keto Woman Podcast Instagram and Facebook pages, and Daisy_KetoWoman on Twitter. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you would like to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. This week's end quote is from Ina May Gaskin. Mother's milk is soul food for babies. The babies of the world need a lot more soul food. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.